Perdón, de Dios y nadie, ¿no?
La Asociación Síndrome de Down de la República Argentina expresó su desacuerdo con la forma en que el gobierno dio de baja miles de pensiones en todo el país. En un comunicado, esta organización criticó que se haya hecho sin previo aviso para las personas que contaban con ese ingreso y sin consulta a las organizaciones que se dedican al tema y que conocen las necesidades de las personas con discapacidad y sus familias. Esta asociación, la Asociación de Síndrome de Down de la República Argentina, dijo que el gobierno tiene que explicar cómo se evalúa la situación de cada beneficiario de pensiones para que no quede sin recibirla personas que realmente la necesitan. Digamos que para justificar lo que hizo el titular de la Comisión Nacional de Pensiones Asistenciales, Guillermo Badino, dijo que, por ejemplo, una persona con síndrome de Down no es sujeto de derecho de esta pensión porque, dijo, puede trabajar si lo deseara.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica. Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en @info-pacífica o en Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez, Informativo Pacífica.
El miércoles, organizaciones sociales mexicanas clausuraron las oficinas de la Organización de Estados Americanos. Norma Martínez reporta.
Estamos aquí clausurando las oficinas de la Organización de Estados Americanos para decir claramente que el pueblo de México está declarando persona no grata en nuestro país al señor Almagro. Para decirle fuera de México, para decir fuera esa asamblea intervencionista, fuera Almagro de nuestro país.
Un colectivo de agrupaciones mexicanas inició su jornada antiimperialista contra el intervencionismo estadounidense, clausurando el miércoles simbólicamente la representación de la OEA, la Organización de Estados Americanos, en la Ciudad de México. Más de 160 agrupaciones sindicales, urbanas, campesinas, de académicos y artistas se han pronunciado contra la próxima sesión de la Asamblea de la OEA en el país, porque aseguran no representa más que los intereses de Estados Unidos y las transnacionales. Criticaron también los ataques desde la Cancillería mexicana al gobierno venezolano, al que acusa de violar derechos humanos y no ser más una democracia. Héctor de la Cueva es integrante de la nueva Central de Trabajadores.
Que el pueblo mexicano no respalda al secretario de Relaciones Exteriores, el señor Videgaray, en su política intervencionista contra Venezuela. Que venimos aquí a repudiar el cinismo y la hipocresía con la que el gobierno mexicano y otros gobiernos están atentando contra el pueblo venezolano. Si hay un país en donde se violan los derechos humanos, si hay un país donde se cometen desapariciones y crímenes, si hay un país donde se comete tortura, es México. ¿Con qué cara va a ir el señor Videgaray a la Asamblea de la OEA la semana entrante en Cancún para decir que el gobierno mexicano critica lo que pasa en Venezuela? Estamos aquí para desautorizar al gobierno mexicano en sus intervenciones en esa próxima asamblea de la OEA, y también para decir que así como Venezuela está decidiendo salirse de ese marco hipócrita que es la OEA, el pueblo mexicano también venimos a decir, los pueblos estamos fuera de la OEA, repudiamos a ese organismo intervencionista. Estamos clausurando hoy estas oficinas, pero también el viernes clausuraremos las oficinas de la Secretaría de Relaciones Exteriores de México, porque el pueblo mexicano está en contra de esta política cínica, hipócrita, intervencionista de la OEA, encabezada por Estados Unidos y el servilismo del gobierno mexicano.
Los representantes de las organizaciones sociales denunciaron el negro historial de la OEA a través de las décadas y ahora bajo liderazgo de Luis Almagro, que arremete contra la democracia venezolana mientras avala golpes de Estado en otros países.
Su recorrido desde 1948 a la fecha está sembrado de cadáveres, violencias y simulaciones. Ahí están aún presentes los golpes de Estado en Guatemala, el Cono Sur, la Operación Cóndor, el asesinato de Salvador Allende. El aval a las invasiones estadounidenses a la República Dominicana, Haití, Puerto Rico, la guerra centroamericana, la proliferación de bases y emplazamientos militares yanquis en nuestros territorios.
La última perla de la OEA lo constituye su respaldo a la subversión y al golpismo en Honduras, Paraguay, Ecuador, Bolivia, Argentina, Brasil y Venezuela. Especialmente en la última, múltiples son las razones económicas, las más obvias, el petróleo y el oro, otras simbólicas y políticas. La revolución bolivariana es la contracara de la OEA, de la doctrina Monroe, del supuesto destino manifiesto pregonado por los fundamentalistas yanquis. Es la otra cara de una nueva Indoamérica posible y necesaria. La revolución bolivariana es el otro rostro alternativo al capitalismo. Es el socialismo en marcha, de un socialismo indoamericano y universal.
Gerardo Fernández Noroña, candidato independiente a la presidencia de México, se pronunció en defensa de Venezuela.
¿Por qué entonces tanta ferocidad sobre Venezuela, mintiendo, denostando, desvirtuando lo que realmente pasa en ese país, cuando en México hay 43 normalistas víctimas de desaparición forzada? Cuando en nuestra patria se asesinaron a 22 jóvenes, 16 tirados en el piso en Tlatlaya, supuestamente narcotraficantes. Cuando en Apatzingán se mataron a 18 personas al grito de mátalos como a perros. En 43 en Tanuato, Michoacán, 11 tirados en el piso, torturados y con tiro de gracia. 7 en Calera, Zacatecas, en un departamento, 2 eran menores de edad, 2 eran mujeres, por el ejército documentado, y el crimen sigue impune. Somos el segundo país del mundo en periodistas asesinados. Los feminicidios siguen a la alza. Apenas el día de ayer la televisión mexicana daba a conocer lo que ha sido un rumor a gritos en Coahuila, el asesinato de 300 hombres, mujeres, niños, perpetrado por el narco en 2011 bajo el gobierno usurpador de Felipe Calderón. La DEA descubrió a 2 narcos del grupo de los Zetas y tuvo el error de informar al gobierno mexicano, quien le pasó la información a este grupo criminal, y el grupo criminal prácticamente desapareció el pueblo de Allende, matando a familiares, amigos, a gente cercana, a las 2 personas que habían pasado la información a la DEA para localizar al grupo narcotraficante. Y la Organización de Estados Americanos y Almagro guarda absoluto silencio de estos crímenes brutales que bañan en sangre el país. Son unos hipócritas de doble moral. Este sábado se va a reunir Vicente Fox, lamentablemente expresidente de México, que envileció las instituciones de la República, con varios presidentes de Latinoamérica, de países latinoamericanos surgidos desde la derecha. Y ahí recibirán a la esposa del fascista Leopoldo López, que siguen insistiendo que es un preso político, y ellos sí pueden hacer política, y la izquierda no se puede reunir con quienes comparten coincidencias. Soy el único político, me preguntaban que cómo presentarme, soy el único político que aspira a la presidencia de la República y que está solidario con el pueblo de Venezuela y con el gobierno de la Revolución Bolivariana de Venezuela. A toda la izquierda le espanta acercarse al gobierno venezolano y al pueblo venezolano. Le preocupa que la endilguen con él. Es verdaderamente hipócrita de toda esta caterva de canallas.
La Asamblea General de la OEA originalmente se realizaría en la Ciudad de México, pero se decidió que Cancún sería la sede del evento. Los activistas consideran que por temor a las protestas. En el marco de la jornada antiimperialista, las organizaciones sociales mexicanas emitieron su carta a los pueblos y naciones de Indoamérica de nuestra Abya Yala.
Ratificamos por ello nuestra decisión de trabajar por ese común destino latinoamericano que permitirá a nuestros países edificar una solidaridad verdadera, asentada en la libre voluntad de cada uno de ellos y en las aspiraciones conjuntas de todos. En la lucha por esa América Latina liberada, frente a las voces obedientes de quienes usurpan su representación oficial, surge ahora con potencia invencible la voz genuina de los pueblos, voz que se abre paso desde las entrañas de sus niños de carbón y de estaño, desde sus fábricas y centrales azucareros, desde sus tierras enfeudadas donde rotos, cholos, gauchos, jíbaros, herederos de Zapata y de Sandino empuñan las armas de su libertad. Voz que resuena en sus poetas y en sus novelistas, en sus estudiantes, en sus mujeres, en sus niños, en sus ancianos desvelados. A esa voz, hermanos, nosotras y nosotros, el pueblo responderemos presente.
¡Presente!
¡De norte a sur! ¡De este a oeste! ¡Ganaremos esta lucha! ¡Cueste lo que cueste!
Para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Norma Martínez.
En España, los intentos de aprobar una moción de censura contra el presidente Mariano Rajoy se quedaron cortos, ya que no pudieron obtener los votos suficientes para amonestar al político por corrupción. Vicent Montagut amplía la información.
Unidos Podemos ha fracasado en este intento de desalojar del poder al presidente del gobierno, Mariano Rajoy, pero su líder, Pablo Iglesias, ha dicho, nada más acabar el debate, que trabajará desde hoy mismo para intentar presentar una nueva moción de censura mucho más distendido el debate entre el PSOE y Unidos Podemos. Pablo Iglesias ha ofrecido trabajar juntos al PSOE para construir una mayoría alternativa y poder presentar una moción de censura, y el PSOE, aunque no ha respondido exactamente a esta oferta, pues ha comprometido a estudiarla. En resumen, más de 16 horas de debate que han trasladado hasta el Congreso de los Diputados uno de los asuntos que más preocupan a los ciudadanos de este país, y es los casos de corrupción que afectan sobre todo al Partido Popular.
Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
This is Ward Churchill saying, get yourself a mind transplant. Listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM.
Right, there are those who would put it that way. That's just exactly right.
I mean, you are drug testing them before they come in, right?
Well, you know, a group of my neighbors up at First Congregational Church asked me about that. Are you drug testing these potential criminals that you're inviting into
exactly,
our neighborhood?
Exactly, into their neighborhood, yes.
And I said, well, do you drug test your house guests when they come into your neighborhood? Receiving an answer not in the affirmative, I suggested that maybe...
You'd be willing to provide drug tests on their neighbors?
Yeah, maybe we didn't feel it was important to do that.
Well, of course, you know, I mean, I'm reading, I don't know whether it's a myth, there's a claim that a large proportion of the homeless community is drug addicted to either meth or cocaine or crack or heroin or other medications, pain medications. This is a claim, yet I also read there's a very small percentage. So I don't really know quite what to believe. I don't have clear stats myself. If you do, or if anybody else does, has any real, you know, documented stats, particularly on the Santa Cruz homeless community, because those are the people that are getting a large amount of what I call public hysteria attention from various groups that call themselves public safety groups. I mean, there's a group that met last night called the Public Safety Citizen Task Force. I tend to call it the Public Hysteria Against the Homeless Task Force, because it was packed by the Mayor Bryant with a bunch of folks who have conservative to right-wing viewpoints. And can you open the door, and we'll see if the FCC is coming in here at this moment to confiscate all our belongings.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh no, it's the birthday gang. Oh, help. On the air. How embarrassing. Is my face red? Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Happy birthday to you.
So the babes have arrived, and they've given me flowers, and it looks like different things. But this is a showtime, you guys. This is not time for these frivolous activities.
Yeah, we came just to interrupt for a moment.
Oh, for a moment.
We brought you a chocolate cheesecake in case you get hungry.
Oh, dear.
And it's a very tiny, so...
I'm going to contact my doctor first before I...
There's some
nice... Well, I'll split it with you if you'd like. Why don't you have some of this?
Oh, because you're on the air.
Well, No, you're not interrupting. I'd like you to meet Jim Weller. He has the distinction of having had your comments removed from the same website at one point. Yes. And we have here what I call we have Tuckahoe Tucker, who is a longtime single mom activist. You've been to the Capitola City Council meetings. What we should do is we should give you microphones. There's actually a second microphone over there. Why don't we distribute the mics? I'd like to apologize that I'm not prepared for this this celebration to my mother's birthing day, and she's not here to do the actual birth.
Yeah, but we love his mommy because he had you.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yay, Robert.
Well, I'd appreciate... my mom. I don't know if it's relevant to the show.
Thank you, Mom. Robert's mom.
But what we want to do is give you three a microphone so you can make comments that are relevant to that one will work too.
If your mom only knew how much trouble that you were going to cause in your lifetime.
Oh, I wish I did. I wish I did. You know.
So what's this all about? An elephant?
An elephant?
No, he said irrelevant. Oh, okay.
Oh, boy. She made a funny joke. All right, so we have... I was just introducing... first of all, I want to thank everybody for... You may send your monetary gifts to me if anybody has also sexual favors are appreciated. We could do that a little more on the sly if you'd like. I won't name any names or point to any people here, but...
prayers for the aged.
Aged, but still vigorous and good-looking, I might add.
Nice whiskers.
No, you, not me,
oh,
cutie.
Me.
So, Jim here is one of the more outspoken members of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Project community, though not... You aren't really speaking for them. You're just speaking for yourself, I imagine.
Right. Whenever I speak, I'm speaking only for myself, not for any organization or entity with which I may be associated or otherwise affiliated.
So are you now, or have you ever been a terrorist supporter of the homeless bums?
I don't think so.
That's a likely story. Yeah. Linda Lemaster, who I also call Lighthouse Linda, is a... You've been on the show a number of times, Linda, and you, of course, are working with Smart Solutions and the dreaded 180-180 project. You've been the head of the Homeless Issues Task Force. It was actually a much better task force than any of the task forces that we have now, such as the one that met last night, the Public Hysteria Against the Homeless Citizens Task Force. Public Safety Task Force is what they call themselves. And, Laura, you were actually the secretary, or the assistant secretary, the assistant...
Administrative assistant
to Don Lane, who wangled a job on the Homeless Issues Task Force way back in 1999. This was actually a task force.
I liked working with Don Lane.
Yeah, that looked into. I'm glad somebody liked working with Don Lane. I mean, it would be unfortunate for poor Don if everybody shared my view of him. Which isn't very positive.
Well, you're hard on everybody.
Not on everybody. I have my heroes.
Well, sure. Thank you.
Who can say now, remember no to get close to the mic. Bring that thing close so we can hear your words of wisdom.
Birthday cake coming
up. And I guess we also have in the studio Valerie, who's a street performer downtown. She was a part of SAFE when it was around, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. She's a longtime, usually behind-the-scenes Huff activist and a supporter of the Huff website. Huff, for those who don't know, by the way, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group that had its... 24th birthday, I don't know, half a year ago or something. It was formed in 1988, the last days of 1988 or the first days of 1989, long time ago. Everybody's eating my cake. This is despicable.
But you know what I
despicable,
realized?
As I say.
I was also a monitor of the satellite shelter program when I was homeless.
Well, we should talk about that because, Steve Plaich has been a big supporter of the ISSP program, and I, of course, have been recently a rather strong critic of Steve in a number of ways. Linda, you've been a defender of Steve, and I'm glad
he has. You saw that, did you?
Oh, yeah, I finally saw your noxious comment online.
Well,
yes.
That's an obnoxious. It's just a different point of view.
No, I said noxious, not obnoxious.
Oh, okay, it must
be. Like toxic and poisonous, right? rather than simply annoying. I just want to make clear. Not really. I mean, I tend to be hyperbolic in my speech at times. But the ISSP was the subject the two of us were talking about. Jim and I were talking about that right before you came in, because he and others have begun with the Associated Faith Communities a new group, which I think is like trying to reinvent a square wheel, the ISSP, which doesn't really serve any significant number of homeless people. It serves a small number, and good for it. But, you know, the idea that this is something you're going to tell the community, we're going to solve this problem with the ISSP, which is what Plaich used to be telling people, is completely ridiculous and contrary to the experience of homeless activists, unless you have a different experience.
Well, I would put it differently.
For the last 25 years.
We're not going to solve this problem without that and many more models of re-engagement.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
It's not re-engagement.
You're doing good.
And what does that mean, re-engagement?
That means housed people are not a different species than homeless people, and homeless people are not a different species than housed people. We're humans, and it's not going to kill us to share our humanity, and it is going to kill us not to. How's that?
But it will kill everybody in their houses to share one inch of their privacy or one inch of their paranoia. That's
but
the problem.
But just because something doesn't cover everybody who needs a bed, at least some people are getting a bed, and then I think maybe that's what you're saying, Linda, is that that could be, there's a lot to be desired or to be added to.
There's all kinds of answers, and I'm not surprised that the churches that don't get to use their buildings at night very often, in general in this country, are among one of the solutions that surfaces in our town, which has a really tight polarity around housing costs, and in a lot of other places as well.
But it wasn't the best solution, I felt like, when I was there, because for my condition, I wasn't able to sleep on the hard floor. I think that, you know, they're kind of making do with what they had, which was, you know, hard linoleum and yoga mats.
Is it hard floors, Jim, these days, or they got feather beds and, you know, soft pillows?
Well, it's a little better than it used to be. We now have a set of very nice shelter mattresses. They're high-density foam encased in heavy-duty vinyl, and they're about 4 inches thick.
Are they water beds? I mean, do they vibrate? What's the deal?
No, they're not water beds, but they're really quite comfortable. They're 6 feet
quilts, very
feet long and 3 feet wide.
I'm
sorry.
I'm asking for feather beds.
Of course. I'm sorry. I've got to control myself. So it has improved. It has improved in the last from the previous ISSP program, because I hate to see people, you know, rolling the same damn stone up the hill again to watch it roll down.
It's a new vision. The former project was something that reached a pretty large expanse, but it had its problems. Largely, that was because of the need for transportation, which was very expensive.
Right.
And elaborate administration, moving people between so many different locations. And what we're trying to do now is to start in a small way and do it on an all-volunteer basis. Keep the administrative costs as low as possible. And try to keep the whole project well-managed and sustainable as it expands.
That's all very nice. I hear that kind of, you know. But to me, that's the chatter of a kind of a, you know, the reassuring kind of background babble that actually conceals the fact that it's never going to grow to encompass more than 5% of the homeless community at most. And that would be like, you know, if you reach the point which the other program did back in 2007 or 8 when it was at its peak, you know, and then failed. I mean, It ended because the Paul Lee Loft got started. That was their excuse for ending it, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little off in my scheduling. Paul Lee Loft, for those who don't know, is it's the Monica Martinez answer. Well, not just her, but anyone who's the head of the Homeless Life Services Center, which others call the Homeless Services Center, their program, which essentially is a waiting list. If you wait 4 to 6 weeks, you'll get into a program for a month or longer if you have good connections with the staff. As I understand it, for 46 people. That's all it is. And it's I don't know what the cost is. I don't know what the cost is per person of that program. That's something, no doubt, that Pamela Comstock will be thoroughly researching and getting involved. She's the council member who's very skeptical about these homeless services.
For the wrong way. Reasons. This telescope he's deconstructing
if you
isn't...
You are going to talk, you should talk into the microphone.
Okay. Well, I agree that it's not enough, but that doesn't... I don't know that their intention is just to placate... you know, homeless activists or anybody
not
into thinking that there's
that.
Nothing more to be done. I think
it's... deluded into believing that they're actually going to grow into some huge real solution to the problem.
Did they say that?
But it can't... But it sounds like you're asking for, like, the perfect solution or no solution at all, which I know that's not what you're doing, but it's what it's sounding like.
What I'm looking for, is the same reason I criticize programs like the 180 program, is that if a lot of resources are being focused into that particular program, instead of at the broader needs of the homeless community for overturning at least the right to sleep,
no,
right,
yeah,
molested,
for sure,
right to have, you know, sleeping bags, not to be beaten up in the night or harassed during the day by police.
Right.
Then, you know, you have what's called a phony focus, as far as I'm concerned.
Uh-huh.
It serves the interests of those who are pushing that program, even if they're doing so for charitable and positive reasons.
But so it's something to do instead of what really needs to be done.
Right,
is
that's the problem. I mm-hmm. You don't hear people...
And you believe that, Robert?
Believe what?
I believe that.
That these... programs that are too small to meet the need of even a particular subsection of the homeless population, because it's stratified, just like homed people. The people have different needs and incomes and opportunities and
abilities.
And they're in different habitats, believe it or not. You know?
Sure.
But are you sure? It sounds to me like you're advocating mass shelter rather than a program that can actually meet the needs of a family or a few people.
No, I'm advocating leaving people alone.
And the right to sleep at night.
And the right to sleep and to camp and to gather together.
And not be harassed or beat up by police.
Find their own means of shelter, whether through the Interface Satellite Shelter Program or any... Or Monica Martin, or 180,
so,
whatever
but
the hell they find.
Can we agree that both are necessary?
Except
yes?
Except that the resources are going more to one than the other. The focus is on those programs instead of on, I think, the more basic issues. That's what's always been my concern.
Civil rights being one of the basic issues, you mean?
It has to be the basic issue. If
it's not an either or. I won't let that be an either or.
But you're feeling like it has been treated as an either. If we do this, we don't have to do that.
That's the point. I mean, you can go to 5 meetings, but if you're spending most of your time on the 180 program, then you are doing that instead of spending your time on other programs. So. Are you trying to say something? You're just trying to wave away a fly.
Okay. No, that's it. I was waving away an errant fly.
We allow flies to say, except we don't know what language they
the fly is singing happy birthday.
We'll
they say buzz. That's all they say.
Buzz.
Well, you want to hear my point of view on what we just talked
we'll
about?
I do.
There's only so much each of us can do. And in my case, for instance, I am a church man. All of my time and effort goes into ministry and mission work. And so I'm doing what is possible for me to do. Given that I'm not a political person, I don't sit in city council chambers, I don't have any political power. But I am.
If you were, you wouldn't be in here.
No. I'm operating in a sector that is somewhat sheltered from the whims of the bump and grind of daily local politics. Churches can pretty much do whatever they want to do. It's a well-established principle in our country. And so we're doing what we can do. And other people are doing what they can do.
It's inspiring for others. If you see what you're doing, they'll want to do something too. So it can inspire more, can't it? You know, more people can do more things. I don't think it's that. I think having a huge thing but would be hard.
It's kind of hard to discourage that, isn't that? When you hear that there's...
We don't want to discourage it, no. But what he was talking about was wasting your time doing only that, not doing something that could really cover, like, people's rights to sleep. But I don't think that you would put all your time... If somebody said, hey, we're going to have a bill, or we're all going to back it up, I think a lot of people would be able to back it up. They wouldn't have their time so involved in that they couldn't be backing up an anti-sleeping ban bill or
I just don't see a lot. I don't see a lot of activity fighting the anti-homeless laws. I didn't see, for example, any of you at the city council meeting on Tuesday. I didn't see most anybody. I saw a few people did show up, and I'm not saying you should have. I mean, guilt trip, and all that. But and it was all a preordained activity that was going to ram on through. But the important thing is to raise issues for the community. By the way, for those who don't know, at the city council on Tuesday, there were two anti-homeless laws passed. They didn't involve execution of homeless people or anything like that, but they involved essentially further police tools to attack homeless people for basic things like trying to get money for food, holding up a sign on the median was the one of the laws. It actually bans everybody from lingering on the medians and the roundabouts in Santa Cruz. And the second law was even worse, had to do with giving police and park rangers and park employees the power to evict someone from a park for 24 hours after issuing them a citation of any kind, whether it's smoking, whether maybe it could be a citation for an old warrant of some kind.
But especially for profanity, that seems to have been one of the cardinal offenses.
The phraseology, yeah. I have to go look for it. Profane, if you annoy someone with profane or abusive language. I don't know if that actually stayed in the bill, because I think it may have, but I'm not sure. It was proposed, I think Lane and Posner, you know, in their great liberalism, proposed to remove that, but supported the rest of the bill, you know. Or maybe they opposed it, but they weren't really very strongly, clearly, clear about it. I mean, Posner actually got some people to write in, he appealed to people to write in against the median ordinance, which is really rather specialized. There aren't that many people who hold up signs on the median.
There aren't?
Well, and there are more people who use the parks for places to be than hold up signs on the median, and because it's a place of refuge.
Well, and what are we protecting? We're protecting people's comfort level as they drive their cars.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking. What I'm saying is that the council members who claimed. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with anti liberals. We should talk about some of these characters on the right, like Comstock and Robinson.
Well, before you go attacking rightists or whatever your name for the bigotry is. I disagree that this isn't executing people not to be able to panhandle on the median strips when so many other places to be and to try to hustle up enough easement and food to get through the day have already been ruled out. I think that when we make it impossible for people who are working from their feet with no what this country calls property to work from, then we make it impossible for them to even feed themselves or get to water, we're killing them. And just because we don't want to see it, and we can pass another law so we don't see how afraid they're getting, doesn't mean we're not still killing them.
Well, not directly.
This is why civil rights are important, because we can kill a mass of people and pretend that we didn't have anything to do with it. I really feel this way. I see it. I know too many people that died for no good reason.
Well, I think you are eloquent and accurate in what you say, although I think many would probably say, who cares what many would say?
If they walk in those moccasins, I might even listen to what they have to say.
But the fact of the matter is, obviously, the park law affects a lot more people than the median law. And my point was that while, you know, Mike Posner made a point of opposing the median law, he really had a lot of respect for the park employees and how they treat people. He thought they were doing a wonderful job, and he spent a lot of time. He usually does spend a lot of time on those kinds of statements. I tend to, you know, look. I tend to hold people accountable for things they say, even if they're no accounts, because I think they have to be held accountable. But the other people who say nothing often get passed over in silence and can be the worst offenders. Terrazas, for example, is the chair of the public hysteria committee, or the public safety committee, as he likes to call it. He and his subcommittee of Comstock and Matthews, who's horrible. I'm sorry, Cynthia, you really have to, you know, it's just...
She knows she's horrible on these issues.
She knows, she thinks she's great on these. She thinks she's doing a wonderful job protecting her.
God, she's a drag.
Cynthia Matthews is the woman who tried to shut down the Red Church 4 years ago by falsely intimating that the city council was opposing Father Joel Miller, and that the police department somehow found various kinds of criminal activities going on that would indicate that the whole congregation was being shanghaied and bamboozled, and $30,000 in ecclesiastical court to essentially get past all this and continue his once a week meal at the Red Church. I mean, it's gotten pathetic that we're talking about such things. But, you know, I've got some things I wanted to play and get maybe some comments from the four of you. But my special guest who I invited in and all my new guests who...
We're your party, man.
It's a birthday party.
Yeah, that's right. Huh?
It's a birthday party.
It's my mommy's birthday day. She's not even here to celebrate it, so it's too bad. But here we are. You know, what I've got is, I guess what I'll do first is, if I can do it, is try to take a little musical break. There's some music that I was playing in the last show, which folks who are listening to the last show may remember. The Occupy movement didn't actually produce a lot of music at the time, but there recently was an album that came out called Zaccotti Confidential. It's actually a free album. It's online.
That's the name of the band?
It's either the name of the band or the name of the
album.
The album?
Yep, name of the album is Steve and Dave.
Steve and Dave.
See, it says Steve and Dave released the Zaccotti Confidential album.
I think those are the people who are releasing it. I'm not sure if they are the people who are... Anyway, I'm going to try to play a tune or two. Here's back in Zaccotti again. And give us all a chance to chatter off here and give everyone a chance to take a breather.
Yeah,
go to the bathroom, which is down the hall.
The
you know, and I should turn up my microphone. Sorry, folks.
Oh, no.
I've actually been talking at a distance, which is probably very refreshing for some people who have heard too much of me even to begin with.
Oh, no.
But let's hear a little something. Back in Zaccotti again.
Back in Zaccotti again. Where the heck are my friends? Does anyone see the man in the box? Officer Winsky or the hipster cop? You know, it was a while ago, but I can't let go. So I'm sitting alone with a pigeon on my hand, and I'm back in Zaccotti again. Back in Zaccotti again. Where the heck are my friends? Has anyone seen the ladies who knit? The guy with the sign that says it's fucked up and bullshit. Was a while ago, but I can't let go. So I'm sitting alone with a pigeon on my hand, and I'm back in Zaccotti again. Does anyone see the man in the box? Officer Winsky or the hipster cop? You know, was a while ago, but I can't let go. So I'm sitting alone with a pigeon in my hand, and I'm back in Zaccotti again.
All right, so that was from Zaccotti Confidential, and it was back in Zaccotti. And Zaccotti, for those who don't know, is the square that Occupy Wall Street began its protests in I guess, September or October of 2011, which spread like wildfire across the country. Santa Cruz had one of its size, one of the largest protests, I would say, around the country, considering the small number of people in the Santa Cruz community. It was a very large group. We were only 60,000 people in Santa Cruz, and we had the initial meeting had a couple hundred people, and there were usually somewhere between 50 and 100 people at the meetings for the first month or so. Is that a fair assessment?
I count it the same way, Robert. In April, the last time I went to a General Assembly meeting, which, by the way, people still meets every Saturday.
4 o'clock.
At 4 o'clock.
Post office
right
steps,
after
folks.
The Food Not Bombs.
Actually, they meet at 5:30. Food Not Bombs is at 4 o'clock.
Anyway, I counted 22 people, not counting the 4 sleepers in the corner.
There weren't that many last Saturday, but yeah. There's
It's not always that busy. I'm just trying to say there's still Occupy Santa Cruz happening.
Yeah. So... That's where these songs came from, and there's an occasionally resurgence. There have been groups who are working on foreclosure and other issues around the country, although they're not doing the occupying anymore. There ain't no Occupy and Occupy at the moment. And although there are groups that do occupy, Homes Not Jails. I'd hope to have an activist from Homes Not Jails on the air today. He was the other guest we were waiting for, Jim. But he didn't show. Maybe he'll show at a future time. He's done stuff up in San Francisco. You may remember, Linda, of course, that Keith McHenry showed and did a special Saturday informational session around and suggesting that Santa Cruz start a Homes Not Jails. He even put out a flyer, Arm the Homeless, with cell phones and other informational, a documentary activity so they can stop people from getting, feeling they can get away with beating them up and harassing them. And that was an issue at a Huff meeting a week ago. We actually had a guy who had talked about how he had been, he had witnessed a lot of abuse of homeless people as he sat in front of the courthouse, people coming and going, commenting in a sort of a sneering or negative fashion about homeless people who were just there. They weren't drug abusers in any obvious way, or alcoholics, or they weren't engaging in behavior of any kind. I mean, being a drug abuser and alcoholic is not a crime, and if you got a house, it can be a virtue. Hey, let's go have a couple of drinks, that sort of thing. But not if you're homeless. So, I know Laura, you said you wanted to talk some more about what I call reinventing the square wheel that will eventually lead, to what, 12 churches maybe being involved in this, although I thought you were telling me, Jim, that it was Paul Lee's claim that they had how many churches involved?
Well, in Paul Lee's book, The Quality of Mercy, he said that in the winter of 1991-92, there were 39 churches participating.
Wow.
Not in any meaningful way. I have to interrupt.
According to Paul Lee in print,
we better call him up. Let's get him on the air.
39 churches that winter sheltered an average of 112 people each night.
Wow.
7 nights a week.
Yeah. Well, what that may mean is that there were 39 churches, each of whom spent one night in the winter involving people. Well, that's what that might mean. I mean,
count that many people not on the streets.
I'm sorry. Count that many people who are on the streets, because the people who are spending all their time with that small group didn't address themselves to the bigger issue.
You're
That's my concern.
40 churches isn't enough to make
40
space.
Churches to allow one night per month, which is, I think, is probably what he's talking about, because there weren't 40 churches involved.
No, I was involved in it. My church did it every Sunday night, and we were just one of the 39 churches.
Okay.
Do you remember there being 39 churches?
There were three churches on a given night.
I can't testify that there were 39 churches, but Paul said so, and Paul knew, so I believe him.
Well, I don't know. I was around at that time. I wasn't directly involved all the time with the ISSP, but I was aware of a lot of people that weren't getting housed. If there were 39 churches, I think more people would have gotten housed.
I know this firsthand, that before the... resources to keep the buses insured ran out, that was then funded through Homeless Services Center, or its prior name, that there were often, usually, three different churches serving people to get them off the street on a given night. And they had a church set aside so that people that were families with little kids or spouses could have a place to be together, because in the whole world they didn't have any other place they could actually come together, including what's the military thing called, and including the bigger armory, the winter armory shelter. The armory, the church floors were set up for individuals, so there came about a church that let families be there, and they ended up with three churches a night for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
which is still not enough. You're right, it's not enough. But
it's not just the churches either. Not enough is not a way to describe it. A drop in the bucket is the way to describe it. I'm sorry, not enough suggests, you know, we're almost there. We're kind of getting there.
Well,
we're going to get there tomorrow.
It
ain't true. Well, it's horseshit. I'm
Wait
sorry.
But I think the question is, too, is that if it was enough, that would not justify it being illegal to sleep, you know, to a biological function, right? So, or to be able
to... That's not really the issue I'm talking about right now. I agree with you. It wouldn't be. But the issue is whether we should say, we should put all this, oh, look at all the wonderful things they're doing. And, it's better than nothing, you know, hearing this, you know, which is obviously true. I don't dispute that, you know.
It's tough because...
To me, it's a way of not focusing on the fact that there's a huge area, and this is the point, that will not be made up by this program. Period.
How are they going to focus?
But can we agree that it's just a tiny itty bitty drop in the bucket, and still not discourage it from happening? Because
I'm not trying to discourage it from happening.
You know, okay, so when
I'm glad it's happening.
When I was utilizing the program, and I'm sure it's different now, but from what I remember, you had to sign up by 4 o'clock. Some people didn't get off work until after that. There was all kinds of reasons why people couldn't use the services. There was a vet who couldn't sleep inside, and I would just break the rules and get him on the bus and feel comfortable that he was protecting the outside of the building, and you know, and so there was different things that we just kind of found ways to compensate for, and there was a small number of people. It was difficult to get in, and there was plenty of things to complain about on a lot of the services that I was so grateful to get. And, you know, without those, I would have been sleeping on cold cement, which I've done, you know.
You lost your son.
It's hard to hear the criticism, but I think that what I thought you were saying, anyway, is that putting energy towards this, you feel maybe takes away from the bigger issue.
No, not even that. I did say that, but what I'm really saying is that if you want to give people the illusion that this is leading to some kind of real solution, there are people out there who are pushing illusions as solutions, and that pisses me off because I don't think it's a good thing to do to the general community, and I think it's also a way of avoiding the search for real solutions. So that's
right.
My concern.
I feel
you understand what I'm saying?
Well, but what I don't understand is, are you against the program because of that?
No, I'm not against the program.
Okay, that's what I was misunderstanding.
No, he said he agrees that it was good.
Okay.
No, except for Jim. I think he should be fired. Look at him. And that hat, I mean, come on.
I think that when you
no respect for anybody.
I know you got a lot of popular support at the street level for this, but I don't support it. I think when you pick the 180-180 program or the young, new interfaith shelter system as examples of inadequate, you're criticizing programs you don't know enough about to be accurately critical of, and you're hanging them up, and you're not getting this thing you say you want. We have to create our own leadership to create human and civil rights and to make it safe for people, whether they think of themselves as homeless or not, to be outside. This is wrong to try to criminalize people out of existence, and nobody's out there saying that, and I don't think it's fair to blame people who are doing all they can do for only doing all they can do, when there are people like you and me that know and can see that there are bigots in power that don't know what they're doing either, and they need our educational background. They need to see with our eyes until they can get out there and see what they're on.
You would call Don Lane a bigot in power when he was mayor, for example?
I don't think he's the bigot, but...
I do.
You
That's
can call
the difference
him that.
Between
you
us.
You and I have a different opinion about
right.
him, but,
yeah.
you know...
I mean, bigot
a lot of my
not,
friends have a different opinion
I mean,
than mine
a,
about
a bigot,
you.
A bigot in the sense, in terms
or
of
you.
His actual policies, in terms of what he does. But, I mean, let's put the personalities aside, and we're talking about the issues.
I'm not talking about
And we have here the man who actually I've invited to the studio. This would have been great to hear from me yesterday in the homeless meeting on these issues. I would have loved to hear this kind of discussion. But I'm glad we're having it on the air. It's very good.
Be more informed before you tear something down. You could be more informed. And
I don't think I'm missing any real facts about the ISS.
I know, you would get them.
I don't think
I don't know about the interface. I know about the 180-180.
Linda has
I know
Linda goes
that they're
to the
full of shit, so they have taken resources from something else.
I'm not getting the impression that you're tearing things down.
I did.
I'm not.
That's what I thought.
That's not my impression at all.
Let's let Jim arbitrate.
Little things because they're not enough. It seems like that's what he was saying.
That these are
inadequate. I don't feel like it.
I like your point of view.
My feeling is that he's saying this is all great, but it's not doing what will really help the community of people who are struggling on the street in an emergency situation right at this moment that aren't getting it. And what can we do about that?
I agree with what you're saying.
Not that it's not helping, but what else can we do? Because we need to solve that problem. And that's what he's saying. He's like, we're solving some problems. We're helping people. But we're not solving the problem. And that's my opinion of what you're saying. I don't know if that's...
I agree with that.
I think what confused me is because you have a guest here who's telling you these wonderful things that he's doing, and then you're saying, well, but...
This is consistently a thing Robert does.
I'm really okay with it. Let's get Robert his due.
Okay. Instead of his doo-doo.
Yeah.
It is my mother's birthing day.
Robert is the eternal critic. I mean, Robert's role in life is... I don't think he's ever met anybody he couldn't criticize.
Myself, of course.
But there are some of
them. Well, when it comes to politicians and people who do homeless services, he criticizes them.
Sure, we need people like that.
But that's he criticizes the 180-180 program when he doesn't know enough about it to give some nature or specificity to that program.
I don't get it. Where is he criticizing? He just said that it was good what you're doing, but we should do more.
You said that.
No, he said that.
I heard you say it.
Well, let me restate. First of all, I don't want to get off into what I regard as a wasted discussion of the 180-180 program.
I'm not saying talk about it.
Therefore,
I'm
not
going to
talk about it. I'm not going to talk any further about it myself unless other people want to. No, you can talk about it. I just don't want to. I'm just self-censoring here myself.
Okay.
Because, first of all, I think, you know, if we're going to talk about it, we should have some, you know, more background and bring it in. I think we should have an educated discussion about what's been done.
Well, you have
the people have backed away and so forth. What we have, however, here is we have a man in the studio who's...
Oh, that's it.
Prepared.
A man in the studio.
Well, the women aren't as important as a man, as we know.
And actually,
let me invite callers to join this raucous chorus here. Phone number here to call in if you wish to join the blather is 427-3772. We're all blathering away. 427-3772. That's area code 831-427-3772. I mean, we really invite you to call and be a part of the deal, because I think, although this is very nice to actually have some different voices than mine, even those I don't necessarily agree with. No, I mean, it's true. It's and I mean, the more information we get, the better. Sometimes. Someone's going to spend all the time on the 180-180 program.
You're the only one that brought it up.
Yeah. Well, I think we can make shorthand comments about things, even without going into them in great detail. But in any case, let's talk about issues that perhaps we haven't yet covered. I was going to play something that is concerned me at the Santa Cruz shitty council, as I sometimes in my adolescent fantasy call it. That's the city council, for those who don't know, meets every 2 weeks and is now controlled by Take Back Santa Cruz sympathizers, it seems to me, headed by Hillary Bryant, David Chiraza, Cynthia Matthews, and of course the two hardline, hardcore, hard to tolerate types, Lynn Robinson and Pamela Comstock. Pamela still has not responded to my request for an interview. Pamela, we want to hear from you.
She doesn't like your T-shirt, Robert.
She didn't like my T-shirt. She was very candid about that as she walked out of the room rather than listen to me talk at the city council because she didn't like my T-shirt. Now, not that everyone, you know, should like my T-shirt. Anyway, so the city council actually... I don't usually go to the city council meetings anymore, probably for the same reason I don't go to the ACLU meetings much anymore, because they are all kind of prefabricated. You can't really get anything out of them. If you bring people to them, it's a kind of a waste of energy in some respects, because it encourages people to believe in illusory hopes, which is a lot of my problem with what we were talking about before. I don't think we should get people to chase after illusions. And so I think nonetheless, I went to City Council on Tuesday because there were two laws that were coming up, and there was also the oral communications period. I had hoped to play a certain audio video, but I wasn't able to secure it at the time. Maybe I will next time. That I thought would be useful for the community to see. It's been a lot of talk about violence against the homeless and abuse. What we need to do is show the community how this process actually operates under the masquerade of public safety, environmental protection, all these nice little labels that actually are used to mask a wealth of sins, unfortunately, in my view. So, but I ran into something I didn't expect. And it's maybe some people regard this as a mere technicality. This was something that happened when former founder of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the city's commission, which the city council would not establish, but I think was established by initiative because the police department was opposing it. Jillian Greenside rose to oppose an item on the consent agenda, which was going to, and I think eventually passed, which cut meetings down by half for the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. And she, I've had her on my show here, she's talked about how rape is a real problem in this community. There's a public safety problem that they have no interest in whatsoever. They'd rather spend their time going after illegal campsites, you know, thank you so much. And which really, you know, not only angers me, but makes me, just sort of produces ironic and bitter laughter when I, you know, or even bitter, I'm just kind of... I don't know what to say. But Greenside stood up to oppose this cutting back of the meetings. And this was on the consent agenda. The consent agenda has a peculiar procedure. I've talked about it on the air before. Unlike other cities where a member of the public can say, I'm going to pull this item off the agenda, meaning I want to talk about it as an individual item, have a staff member address it perhaps, the council discuss it individually, apart from all the other items, and then vote on it individually, instead of in a block. So that it can actually be focused on, so something can be particularly noted. Well, I believe she was requesting this. Certainly, she was addressing this item. And having said that, she was interrupted because she ran out of time. You only get two minutes to address all. I think at this time it was five or six consent agenda items. Often it could be as many as 30. It's consent agenda items in 1 2-minute block. You get to talk about all of them. Or you can spend your time asking a council member to pull certain of these items so they can be addressed by you individually. So I went up there and I said, I think it's outrageous. You know, blah, blah, blah. I think you should allow her to finish what she's saying. And I'm going to I can't play what I said because I didn't get that on tape. It is, however, available once the wizards at the city council put it up as a video. There is a video procedure online. You can now view older city council meetings. In Monterey, these videos go up 48 hours after the actual meeting. Here in Santa Cruz, I've seen it be as long as a month, and it would probably be longer, except, you know, malcontents like myself call in and say, where the hell is the video? And they say, oh, you mean there's no video up there? Yeah, no, there's no video up there. Oh, well, we'll look into that. And then soon after, they actually start putting it up, which is, you know, which is good. I want a tip of the hat to Becky, the staff member at the City Hall for dealing with this, and to Scott Collins, who I hate his presentations, but I get the feeling he may not even believe what he's saying. Hopefully he doesn't. He's been trying to be helpful to me, at least, and I perhaps other members of the community, in getting information and making these things available to the public. Right. So, in this situation, I went up there to say, please pull this item from the agenda. Certain council members here came to power on the promise that they wanted to make this process more transparent and more accountable and give the public more comment time. So let's get to it and do it. Mm-hmm. That rhymes, actually. That's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yes. And Micah Posner, took the bull by the horns. He's never done this for me before, I don't think. I don't recall that he has. And he said, okay, I'll pull this item from the agenda. And I thought, oh, okay, well, and we, at least we'll be able to hear the rest of Jillian's speech. And, you know, of course, they'll all vote her down. They'll mow her down like they usually do. But, you know, because they've got this, as I said, it seems to be largely a rigged game. And it isn't because you have the Bryant majority. You had the same problem when Don Lane was mayor. You had the same problem when Mike Rotkin was mayor. You had the same problem when Tim Fitzmaurice was mayor. Although there was more, there could have been more, there may have been more, there was more actually discussion from the right rather than from the left on the city council in those days. Nowadays, the right doesn't have to talk. They just sit there and you know, pass everything through. By the right, I don't mean the people who are in the right. I mean the people who believe in giving more power to the police, to authorities, insisting people behave in, you know, ways that their grandmother would have approved of, perhaps, when she was a girl, that sort of thing. Ancient right-wing religious standards that they want to impose on the entire community.
Fear-based.
Fear-based. Thank you. I think that's true. So, I was then... I guess I'll let this tape speak for itself, because I did start recording when the staff member of the Commission for the Prevention of Police Investigation of Violence, because that's really what it is, they are in league, it seems to me, with covering for the police department, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. Linda may disagree with me. Maybe you've been keeping closer tabs on it.
It wasn't like that when I was on it.
That's good. You were back in 1998.
It was our job on that commission. We had a special subcommittee that had to be trained for it to read the police reviews, like you might have done for the Civilian Police Review Board on the domestic violence and rape.
They didn't allow that in the Civilian Police Review Board, not for the public anyway.
No, but the commission was doing
that. The commission
and trying to keep up with it.
Right.
And I don't know that they're still doing that or not.
They might be.
You had to understand the confidentiality involved in both the police conduct and anyone mentioned in their reports.
Yeah.
But we were to find patterns and also individual examples of missteps where it had
well,
to
I know
those kind of crimes.
I believe it was out of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women in 1992 came the demand that a sergeant and now hero above heroes, Butchie Lauren Baker, be at least suspended from duty pending an investigation of complaints of harassment and fondling of 10 women. That came from the Commission of Prevention of Violence Against Women.
All at once? That's pretty impressive.
No, it was over a period of time. Even Butchie is limited in his capabilities.
Little at a time.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, I throw this out because when I was at City Council 2 days ago, what did I see but more of these iconic, slick pamphlets, you know, heralding the wonderful work of Sergeant Baker and Officer Butler, you know. I wasn't terribly happy with Officer Butler because I didn't like the way that in the occasions when I heard about her behavior with homeless people, though there were exceptions, I didn't like what I heard about her. With Baker, unless he changed in the last 5 or 10 years, I mean, he was a major dirtbag in terms of how he treated people. And he was successfully sued twice, once by me and once by Mike True. The city, you know, lost money because of Baker's false arrests. And it's just... it wasn't like he was well-intended. He was using his office for things that police officers probably continued to do. And, you know, the fact that he was shot dead should in no way change our clarity of the record of what happened with him. And if there were good things that he did, I definitely want to hear about it. But I'm sure as hell not going to ignore my understanding of his earlier record. And that's, I guess I have to keep bringing that up because I didn't bring it up in the immediate... deification processes that happened after the shooting. Anyway, here's the staff member from the Commission for the Violence Against Women for the Prevention of Violence Against Women talking to City Council. Again, the issue is should they cut back?
Former staff member or staff member?
I'm not entirely sure whether she was a former staff member or staff member, but I think she probably was the current staff person because she's the person who Micah said he wanted to hear from and so forth. And so that's why he removed it from the agenda to do that, which would open it up to public comment. That's the process that's followed, and at least historically has been followed. So here it is, and let's listen to it.
Harley, now we're down here at the Red Church, just about 525.
It's assuming I can find the right tape, of course. Maybe it's the other... I did. It had the label on it for some reason. What we do at this in this situation is, in order to avoid really obvious embarrassment, we play another song because that will enable me to scamper and frolic and try to find out just what seems to be the problem here. So don't go away. And hold your ears for a minute. There we go. And we'll be back. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. In the studio with me is Jim Weller, Linda LeMaster, Laura Tucker, Valerie Christie, and, of course, your favorite host, me. I'm Robert Norris. Your option is to call in and actually talk to some intelligent people who can actually give a different point of view than my endless tirade, which I'm sure many are quite familiar with. 427-3772.
Disappear from the earth. They're gonna stop and frisk. Then they're gonna strip and search. They're gonna take you to Guantanamo and you'll disappear from the earth. NDAA, you're taking our eyes away. Everybody here, be careful what you say. The government is being malicious. It's only because everybody here, you look suspicious. So they're gonna stop and frisk. Then they're gonna strip and search. They're gonna take you to Guantanamo. It's the very last place that you wanna go. So you better get used to the risk. They're gonna stop and frisk.
So that was Stop and Frisk from the item Zuccotti Confidential. And I found, I hope, the tape. We're going to play a little of that now. And again, this is the Tuesday meeting, the afternoon session of the Santa Cruz City Council. And the issue is, should the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women's meetings be cut by half? And here's a staff member at the request of Councilmember Posner talking about it with the item pulled from the consent agenda for individual discussion and presumably public hearing.
Consideration tour. We started hearing about this possibility quite a while ago, and I think it is a well-considered and a well-evaluated proposal. If you have questions, I'll attempt to answer them.
Well, does that mean that the commission would feel sufficiently supported where, less meetings with regard to your work that you guys are trying to accomplish?
We had a pretty thorough evaluation of how we can continue to be effective and reduce from 12 to 6 meetings a year. And based on how we've structured them so that we have most of our meeting time right in front of the most important months, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, October Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And we also are working with our partners to have effective programs, and I think we can do it. We would not have voted in favor of this at the commission level if we hadn't given it due consideration.
This is Cynthia Matthews. I want you to note that there's absolutely no substance whatsoever in anything she's saying, other than the fact that, she thinks they gave it due consideration and that was their opinion. And it was probably what she recommended in a staff report. So it may have come from her in the first place. I don't know. Possibly not. But in city council activities, staff has an extremely powerful role. They are given the lion's share of the time at city council, and they're usually the most conservative force. Not always, but frequently, particularly when it comes to matters involving the police. So the next voice you're going to hear is that of Cynthia Matthews. Any comments from anyone else? I know, Linda, you were on the commission. In fact, you chaired the commission at one time, did you not?
Yeah. I chaired it twice, but I chaired it once for a whole year, and I served on that commission for 8 years. But at the time, it was, in fact, more active than it is now. And the the way the city ran all its advisory bodies changed about the time my term there ended. And it changed in the sense of insisting that all the minutes, all the records from the meetings, be pretty much stripped to a skeletal outline. That there wasn't our conversations. And that really, for the commission I was on, I'm not talking about advisory bodies in general, that kind of really, it took a few limbs from the commission. Because we had a very feminist evolution, let's say, where we went out of our way to check in and see how people were, and that was part of our process. And so at that time, this sort of downsizing that I witnessed as I was leaving that position, and, but still on this committee that read police reviews as a community volunteer, it seemed was so the community would know what these commissions and advisory boards were doing. That was my take on it. But it probably had more to do with trying to make the most of staff time. That's probably the kind of consideration the agents for the city were making, trying to stretch staff support for these bodies further. And what you just played on there, that's the only thing that comes to my mind that makes sense, is this came from the staff person. She needs more time for events that have become traditional and annual events, so she doesn't want her commission, sounds like she thinks it's hers, meeting when she needs to do more work. So it sounds to me like just a lot less energy and time is allowed into that process for that commission. I'm not here trying to comment about the whole advisory board system, but I think it would be well advised for someone to check in with half of them and see how people feel about whether they're heard or not in the city.
You know, I wanted to ask you about Jillian Greenside, and I also want to ask you, I want to make a comment myself. I'll make the comment so I don't forget it. That is that Mike Rotkin, when he was about a decade ago, was successful in eliminating extensive minutes of the city council meetings. And then I think there was a move to eliminate extensive minutes of the full minutes, I would say,
yeah,
of the different commissions. And this was put forward, perhaps sincerely, as an attempt to save time and money for the city. But it also, of course, put the community in a position of A, not having as much information about what's going on, B, not having the comments that it makes memorialized, and so making it less likely they'd want to even talk because they're not going to be on the record, and also, three, not holding the members of the commissions and the city council accountable because they're, instead of seeing their comments, all you saw was their vote. Mm-hmm. You didn't get to see the discussion. And I regarded this as a further example of the insulation of those in power and disregard for public trying to have some kind of meaningful input. What was your
retreat
sense?
Retreat from transparency. I think I'd agree with you on this in general. And it was also in this sequence of the things you just described, the city, then its advisory bodies, it also became that you couldn't have the agenda mailed to you unless you paid in advance for a year or two of agendas and or brought them your pre-addressed, pre-stamped envelopes. And I think that what they meant was a transition to using the Internet to notice people. But they did it in such a clunky way that too, became less transparency. It's very sad, and it's something that ordinary people have to fix. Nobody in the city government's going to face that. They have heavy things to deal with.
The other question I had is, Jillian Greenside has been a very strong critic of the commission's behavior in the last decade, as well as the police department's behavior around issues like rape. Was she involved at the time you were on the commission? Did you find her criticisms plausible, important, irrelevant? What?
I have never found her criticisms, whether it's for women's parts or city heritage trees, irrelevant. I think they're pregnant with the kind of things we need to be thinking about if we want our communities to thrive. So, you know, I'm not going to say that for you. But she was on the, as you said, she's a founding member of the commission. She put a ton of years into it before I was involved. And as we just talked about, you and I both, the committee began downsizing about the time I left. They assigned the first staff person, who was also a staff person, to other commissions, and they began slowly taking away having a place to meet that was unique to that commission so that we could have people come in and out of the community off the street who might need confidentiality or feel they did. So those things began to disappear along with the minutes thing you were talking about, information being forbidden to be in the minutes.
Jillian Greenside, what about her?
What
My question was, what did you? How did you find? What was her role there? Did you find it in any way? She was a strong critic of this particular process that was being voted on by the council, but she's also been a strong critic of a number of other failures, as she saw it, or
failings. If she was being critical of the downsizing of the Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women, I agree with that. And I thought it was appropriate.
I'm not asking about that. I'm asking what was your general impression of her when she was on the commission? Was she someone you frequently agreed with, disagreed with?
Two women that were on one of the commissions that were motivating to me enough that I put in an application. And it wasn't until another time a year or two later that I put in another one and I was actually considered. But those two people were Jillian Greenside and Sylvia Karras. And I would not have tried that if those women didn't seem to have a true, genuine voice and a concern for people, and, as it were, an ear to our government in that city. And I was a resident of the city at the time.
And did Jillian and Sylvia continue to be on the commission after you were there?
I wasn't on the commission when they were.
I see. So you can't really answer my question there.
They both ended their term right during the time I was being assigned to it.
I see.
Appointed.
I mean. Okay, well, then let me proceed with what you've just heard. Before our commentary was, I believe the staff members, you know, saying, oh, everything's fine, we've made decisions, we've investigated, it's a great idea. And a Posner asks some meaningless question about, did you really examine it closely or some such thing? It's hard to hear what he said.
Yeah.
He didn't address, I wish I had the speech, and I probably will have the speech maybe 3 months hence when they put this stuff up online.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a month hence, maybe a couple weeks hence, because they get better if you press them. That's the thing to do, folks. Press these bureaucrats for appropriate action. And the key here is persistence. You just keep doing it, and then you make it public. And you bring five people with you, and you do it again. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to break windows break the iron grip or break into the iron stronghold of these folks.
Use your words and be specific.
That too, for sure. All right, let's hear some more, and then you can hear what happened. What you're going to hear next is me going up to the mic to make my comments, because that's what customarily you do when an item is removed from the consent agenda for public discussion.
The whole commission for your work and for being so thoughtful. And this commission has become, I think, every year more and more effective. And part of that is because they do, contrary to some comments, really involve the public in terms of their activities, their volunteers, engaging the students, community partners, and so forth. So the number of meetings a year are really not the indicator of effectiveness. And I just have to congratulate all of you for the work you're doing. And I appreciate that you're looking at how to be effective and not just counting meetings. So I'm happy to make a motion to that effect, or maybe we have more discussion.
And again, there's no, this is Cynthia Matthews, who's one might expect a supporter of the staff here. She doesn't refer to any of the specifics, and unfortunately I don't have the specifics with me that Jillian Greenside was raising. Just sort of, you're doing a wonderful group, you're doing a fine job, the number of meetings isn't as important as the fine effective. Nothing specific about the effectiveness, how effective in what areas were they in the last 2 years, you know, how did they improve, what the situation is, how will the number of meetings actually impact them. None of that is really discussed. It's just shit through a goose approach, as I like to call it. Slides right on through. Then she makes a motion. And my thought was, well, they haven't heard public comment yet. Why are they making a motion? But sometimes they do before they hear public comment. But then things began to move more quickly.
For this thing, I'm curious, and this may be for you, Pat, or staff, what's before us explicitly is just the change in the bylaws that there would be fewer mm-hmm. meetings. What is the actual, is there a change in the amount of staff support you'll be getting as a commission?
If I understand it, and I might need to bring Scott back up here, there's a very thorough evaluation of our program coordinator's workload, both with regards to her work as an event coordinator and on the commission. It was evaluated by an outside consultant, and I think that the recommendations that followed came from looking at how can we still be effective. I'm sorry that doesn't directly answer your question, because I don't know exactly about the hours.
We're going to interrupt this because that's the prerogative of the radio host. Linda, you had a thought that you... Yes, you did.
That was more of a reaction than a thought.
Wait a minute. Let's turn off your microphone so people can hear you.
What thought did I have, Robert?
Well, I believe you said, you know, she said, it doesn't really directly address the issues, and you said it doesn't touch it at all.
Yes, that is what I said. I heard an avoidance there in the little bit of speaking that person made.
And Laura Tucker, you were saying something about don't trouble your pretty little head about this stuff.
We've got it all under control. It's been looked at.
Yeah, and we hired a consultant. You know, there you go. I mean, rather than provide support to, I don't know, women in trouble, we hired a consultant to figure out how to cut back on our meeting time.
Even if that were a legitimate response in context, it would have needed to be a little more specific for people listening to understand that that's meant to answer the question. It seemed evasive to me.
Well, sure, because if it truly has been thoroughly reviewed, then you would be
somebody
able to pull some little piece of data
something
out of your
specific
memory about something that you reviewed.
Especially when Don asked, like...
Well, his specific question was about staff time. Is it going to... She didn't answer whether it was a cut in the staff time. So even that simple question, which in a way is kind of a setup for her to say, oh, no, we got the same staff time. We're just going to spend, you know, half of it talking to Take Back Santa Cruz or something like that, you know, because that's now a part of our role. Take Back Santa Cruz, Pamela Comstock came out of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. She was on that commission for the last few years, and Take Back Santa Cruz held joint events with the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. And I remember getting roasted at one of those events, but the life of an activist is not a happy one sometimes.
Yeah.
All right, so let's hear some more from, again, the City Council meeting, and this agenda item, to cut time for the public, the Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women.
I'm really happy that Kathy can still give us hours because she has institutional memory amongst all of us, and she's just been a brilliant at both event coordinating and working for the commission. So, yeah.
One of the things I'd like to say, as someone who spent some time on this commission,
this is Pamela
is that so much of the work is done outside of the council chambers. It's these subcommittees made up of three of the commissioners that really do the work and then report back. And so I have complete faith in the women on the commission that that work will continue to get done. So thank you for being conscientious of that time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any comments on Pamela Comstock's analysis here?
I'll save my comments for Pamela Comstock, but feel free to help me get where I can talk to her.
Hmm. Okay, let's hear what happens next.
I mean, as you can hear, I think there's real depth of support for your work on the commission as a council. So, you know, having heard that you've thoroughly reviewed this, I think I'll be inclined to go along with staff recommendation. However, at some point, you know, the commission feels like it needs more staff time, which isn't necessarily meeting with other council members, as you can point out. And I hope you will talk to council members because, you know, we're slow and it takes a while, but we can sort of make sure that we match your time on your time appropriately.
So what Micah Posner is saying here is he's reassured by this testimony, but if they need more staff time in the future, he hopes they'll come forward. He hasn't even determined if their staff time is going to be cut back.
They must not hear.
Perhaps, or perhaps they don't care. I mean, he's not. If they did, I assume they would say something like, you know, the staff time isn't being cut. You know, we're glad to hear that, and we commend you on your wonderful work, as they are saying anyway. Posner has a habit of doing this, of endless praising of the staff. He's into this. I think one gets the feeling, and I guess he wants to be a part of the team. He wants to be a part of the group. He wants to be in with the in crowd. And this, of course, is the danger of someone who comes into these meetings. Is in order to do that, you have to check your principles at the door, I find, and that perhaps standard. But then what happens next?
Thank you.
I'm very happy to go ahead and move the recommendation we have.
And that's Hillary Bryant then saying she's proceeding with the recommendation for a vote.
Public comment.
Voice is mine from the back of the room. Public comment.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I say it again because she ignores me.
You guys have a comment on this, and
looking at Adam Messiah and his book.
If there's anybody new from the public that hasn't spoken to the Simon yet, you can speak.
You are excluding me from public comment even though it's been pulled from the agenda. Is that correct?
I am asking you that you've had your chance to make public comment on this item.
My point was to have the item removed from the agenda so that public comment could be made. That was my point.
Thank you. Please
spare me the motion. I want to make it real clear for any record in the future. You are excluding me from public comment right here. Is that correct?
Sir, you've had your opportunity to comment.
You're not allowing me to speak now. Is that correct? Is that correct? Just tell me yes or no. That's all.
You have had an opportunity to speak on this item. Thank you.
You are excluding me from public comment now. Just tell me yes or no.
I am. You have had your opportunity to speak on this item. You spoke publicly on it. Thank you, sir. We have a motion and a second.
You are excluding me from
all
public comment.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Interesting how evasive you're being on this.
Thank you. And we are moving on our agenda to...
Unfortunately, there were people in the audience who heard this, and nobody said anything.
They should have been. People
and do you know who some of them were?
They might not have understood exactly what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Robert, do you know who some of them were?
Oh, you know, they were people who were opposing the ordinance changes. And there were staff members, and there were people...
I mean, in the audience.
That's what I mean.
Oh.
You know, there were about five... More,
was
almost
Jillian
more,
there?
Jillian left before this started. And I was wondering if she didn't want to be associated with what I was saying, or she just was depressed with what the council was doing, or had some other engagement. I haven't even gotten back to her to discuss this with her.
Maybe send her your letter.
Yeah. But and then in response, now that you brought it up, Linda, I filed what's called a Brown Act complaint. And a Brown Act complaint states that she's in excluding me from speaking at this point, she is violating... the Brown Act provision that allows you to speak on items under consideration of the City Council and also not to be discriminated against because of the content of your speech.
Mm-hmm.
And she responded to my Brown Act complaint in an email today saying that as far as she was concerned, she'd give me opportunity to speak and that she was forwarding it to the city attorney for further review, which of course means nothing. And he'll say no. Fuck off, in so many words, in very polite legal language, or just not respond at all.
I mean, she's treating you the same way she was during the meeting.
What, Linda?
That it seems to me that she's treating you in the same attitude that she's treating you during the meeting.
Well, she is responding very quickly. Kennedy would usually wait a month or two, or weeks, or before he would actually respond to Public Records Act requests. I mean, she, I think, was nervous about this issue. But what... Really, I mean, if you really want to look at who's responsible, Don Lane is the man to look at.
Don
has been at previous city council meetings. He knows that items that are pulled from the consent agenda can be spoken on by the people who pulled them.
Mm.
They can. And in fact, that's why they do pull them. They have to go through this elaborate beg process to get the item off the agenda. Then if they can, they can actually make another 2-minute comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
And after hearing...
Do you think she may not have understood the rules of the...
Clearly she didn't care when she rejected my Brown Act complaint, because she could have said, you know, well, I think I was right. There may have been some confusion here, and if you want to raise the issue in the future...
Something.
One of the things I pointed out in my Brown Act complaint is it's not just Robert Norris that's being shut down here. It's anybody in the future that's put into an incredible double bind.
Well,
if you walk up to the mic and you say... You have two choices. She's putting people in a position where they can either say, please remove this item from the agenda, and then say nothing more, because otherwise you'll have had your public comment on the item. Or you can say, you know, I think this item should be removed from the agenda for the following reasons, blah, 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 and I have these opinions about it, but I can't talk about it for very long, and I've got these other things to say about these other consent agenda items that I don't want you to necessarily have to remove from the agenda. Then it gets... In other words, you can either... If you say that, then she can say, you talked on the item, you can't talk about it once it's removed. It's an incredible double bind on people, and it violates even the very absurd and restrictive process that the City Council has chosen to adopt on consent agenda items, not followed by almost every other legislative body in the state of California, as far as I know. There are a few who do. Fresno does, I think, I'm told, but I'm not sure.
I'm just wondering, if did she understand that she was making the mistake when she made it, and did she do that intentionally, or was it a mistake that should have been pointed out and was chosen not to be pointed
my
out
point
by...
Is, my point is that Don Lane did not point it out, and he could have done so. He's he's been mayor on a number of occasions, and that more important than that, she had a day to be aware of it. I mean, actually, she responded to me today, so she had 2 days. Well, she had a day, Wednesday, and part of Thursday. And she didn't, you know, she consulted with other people, and she decided, for
that
one
she
reason,
was okay.
That she was fine, that she didn't have to.
Standard ground. She decided standard ground whether she thought whether what she did was okay or not.
Right.
Well, that's kind of tragic in itself, because it should be cut and dry.
It is cut and dry, but if you're too either busy or overwhelmed or just ignorant to understand that asking to have something taken off the consent agenda so the council actually deals with it before they approve it is different from addressing the thing that was taken off the consent agenda. You're the mayor and you can't understand that distinction.
But
there's a problem.
So is there any way to save face once they have made that mistake? And they've gotten your Brown Act complaints, and now they're trying to decide what to do with it and what are the consequences of having made a mistake.
The consequences of having made a mistake is they have to redo the item. That's it.
And they chose not to do that.
They haven't even dealt with it.
They have never, ever, on any of the Brown Act complaints I've made in the past, and they've been for other reasons usually, like I've been excluded from the chamber, or they all walked out of the room, or you know, or they shut people down who were trying to speak. They've never redone an item that I've made a Brown Act complaint on. So I don't have, you might say, I don't have a very sterling
record.
So
you have the right to complain as much as you want, but that's pretty much all you've got.
Right, well,
is what it's
and I am actually aware that I'm likely to be ignored, but I think it's important that the public know what's going on, and that's why I do this.
Yeah.
And that's why I talk about it on the air, because it seems kind of arcane, all these little, who cares, the Commission of Preventive Violence Against Women,
it just
six
seems like
meetings,
they should be held
meetings.
To certain standards and that there should be consequences if they're not meeting those standards. But
right, in theory, they could be taken to court for this.
Yeah, well,
but I mean, it would involve, I don't know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
Right.
It would involve time. And the best you can get from them is they'll redo the item. And you'll get the same result.
She could also be shamed into just resigning from the whole council. That's happened before on city councils in this city.
Not for that
kind of
thing.
And they come back someday.
Actually, no.
For doing something embarrassingly dumb.
It only happened once with one council member, and then he never came back.
Two. And one of them's on the council now.
Who are you talking about?
I'm saying the public can shame them.
Which council member are you talking about, Linda?
I'm talking about Mo and Don for sending nasty cards to someone in a different
Don Lane wasn't shamed from leaving the council. He spent out his whole term. Mo Reich was.
I'm saying that they're...
I'm sorry.
All I was trying to say is I've seen where if the people come in with one voice instead of the usual schism and say, we really want our mayor to know what a motion is from what a request is, and what hearing from the public is from shutting them down, the person might not be able to take the heat.
I agree completely. I just, you know, the problem is if you get a group like Take Back Santa Cruz, which can mobilize a lot of people to come with the same mythology, which is needles, 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 public safety, dirty homeless, get rid of them, they're after us, public safety. They keep saying the same thing loudly enough and with enough people. You're right. They get action. They get response. Usually the council gets defensive and starts defending its own actions first. But then they'll start passing parts of the agenda which don't necessarily impact their political futures, I would suppose.
I didn't mean to suggest it was likely, Robert. But, you know, I can imagine somebody walking out of that job, it doesn't pay much, before I can imagine somebody effectively suing them for not paying attention to what they're doing.
I think it's good to mobilize, you know, people around those issues. I agree with you completely. And that was something I wanted to play. And I see we've had a wealth of phone calls at 427-3772. All you folks just eager to jump into these arcane discussions. You are, in fact, still tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. We are actually also going out on, we're not really going out on freakradio.org, but if you go to freakradio.org and you click on the little red dot on the top of the transmitter icon, you can get to the stream that we are going out on. That's freakradio.org. And you can also find the archives to the show in case you wish to hear it all again at HuffSantaCruz.org, HuffSantaCruz.org. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the largely dysfunctional group that meets every Wednesday at 2 o'clock, sometimes having separate meetings with separate individuals off to the side.
And that was not a mere subcommittee. It was an autonomous, anonymous action.
A very spirited group. And, you know, it's...
It has a tendency to go off into social group.
It was a subcommittee.
In any case... In any case, I invite people to come to the meetings on Wednesday, if you can find us there, at the 2 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. If you want to be involved with HUFF, which we're concerned, again, about these anti-homeless laws, protesting them, making connections with activists in other cities who have similar concerns about their cities, protecting homeless people from the vigilantism and police abuse that is growing, unfortunately, in Santa Cruz, you know, and directing people as well to support the kinds of efforts that involve sheltering homeless people, which we began talking about today, that Jim Weller here is working on, and Linda LeMaster is also working on at the, you know, good luck to Linda, 180-180 project.
I'm not working on that. I'm just a supporter.
Oh, she's a supporter of it. In any case, so if you're interested in any of these issues, HUFF needs you. I mean, we need people good at computer work. We need people who are interested in doing graphics. We need people who want to have spirited informational discussions on the radio, like we're having today.
Put their bodies on the line.
And people who want to engage in actual protests. I know it's not fashionable in the 21st century to actually engage in protests, because, you know, who wants it on your record that you've, you know, been arrested and all that sort of thing. But there's some things perhaps worth getting arrested for. Of course, the question then arises as to... is it doing any good? And that's a whole separate issue. So, I'm going to move on to the next item on my agenda, which is here. And we have about a half an hour left in the show, for those of you who are wondering when this is all going to end.
Did we end up interrupting his interview with him?
Yeah.
Did not interview him yet?
Jim is kind of a co-host here, a silent co-host.
It was pretty much a non-interview. I was just sort of here to answer questions.
He spruced up
comments.
The situation. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to add a little kind of salt and pepper to this whole situation. Okay. I was invited to call T.J. Magallanes on this broadcast. T.J. Magallanes is the man who started the Clean Team. He left Santa Cruz because he said it was a very hostile environment for him. He said the Take Back Santa Cruz people had taken over the Clean Team.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
And there's a very good, interesting interview done by Jeremy Leonard on Santa Cruz Patch, which disappeared under pressure from who knows who. I reposted it, or was reposted under an article I wrote on Santa Cruz Indie Media. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call that guy. See if he's still around. He's in Oklahoma right now, and he said the tornado missed him by about he said a mile, I believe.
Oh, man.
He said, and he's trying to help people out there, and let's see if we can reach him and see if I can find his phone number. I can't call long distance, but he has a local number. So I'm thinking we can reach him this way. We'll see if we can. And I'm not sure that we are able to do that on this. Hello? This is answering machine. We'll see if we can get through to him. And he may be calling us back. I think last time he had to call us back in order to reach us.
Hi, you've reached TJ with In Digital Institute for the Recording Arts. Sorry I missed your call, but if you leave a message, I will get back to you promptly. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To send a fax, press 4 now. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey, TJ, this is Robert Norris calling in from the studio, per my warning that that's what was likely to happen. I've got a bunch of people in the studio here who I think would like to have a conversation with you about life, life in Oklahoma, life in Santa Cruz, some of the issues we've discussed. If you want to get back to me, you can. I have about half an hour left. It's 7:30 our time, I think 9:30 your time. So give me a call back if you want, 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. If you can't get through on this number, try 831-469-3119, 831-469-3119. Thanks. So we'll see if we can get through to him. For those who want to, you know, research this in anticipation of his callback, which I think he may do, because he's been pretty forthcoming, and I got the impression he did want to talk. You can go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. That's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Are you familiar with that website at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
I saw your article, the post, the repost.
Oh, good. And his interview, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
And I've interviewed TJ before on the air. He's called in. He hasn't called in. It was a taped interview, and people can actually find it by going to the Huff website and looking under the name of the show, and you can find old shows, and you can find that interview, as well as lots of interviews with Linda LeMaster, who's a frequent person on the show.
I co-hosted once.
Yeah, and you're welcome to come in and co-host again.
Someday, maybe.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find this. I think it was a couple weeks ago. It was a main story on the video of Take Back Santa Cruz supported clean team harassing homeless, the one that was suppressed.
I saw that.
That was really what the issue was. There was a video of a man who apparently was identified by some people as Ken Collins, Ken Skindog Collins, who's gained some notoriety by his outspoken anger at the Santa Cruz City Council and the Santa Cruz Police Department and other authorities for not, in his mind, dealing with the needle public safety issue as he's seen it, as well as other issues. I've actually talked to Ken personally. I don't have any problem with him. He's as an individual, I don't agree with a lot of his views. But he is pictured in this video, as many of you probably know, as verbally abusing and poking a homeless guy in a sleeping bag with a, some kind of
garbage picker-upper.
A garbage picker-upper, yeah. One of those kind of manual snatchers. You can snatch items up and put them in a trash can and on a stick sort of thing.
And he's yelling. It's a bullying dance.
Yeah, it's bullying. And it's also, there are other people who are also involved. And I think Annalisa Cube, the head of Take Back Santa Cruz, was interviewed finally by a mainstream radio station. And she denied having seen the video. And when she saw it, she said she was very shocked and couldn't believe it. And
shocking.
Yeah, and she, you know, I mean, and a lot of people, like, sound like you're one of them, Jim, were skeptical that she wasn't really perhaps being entirely honest about not having seen it before. My response is that, you know, I suppose it's conceivable that she intentionally avoided looking at it because she anticipated this kind of a discussion would come up. Or maybe, you know, she didn't see it for one reason or another. I haven't talked to her about it. She's not likely to talk to me about it anyway. Although I have exchanged civil greetings with her and her baby at the city council. She shows up with her babe, and it's a cute baby. Go Annalisa. A baby-wise, of course. But in terms of her, the whole phony public safety agenda of the Take Back Santa Cruz, I have no sympathy and, quite frankly, a lot of hostility toward that.
So have they defined safety before, where this thing becomes the problem of having to redefine it? Or are they just relying on what people all
who's
feel?
Who's they and who are you talking
about? Take Back Santa Cruz. Do they for safety?
I don't know much about Take Back Santa Cruz other than what I'm told secondhand or what people, sympathizers, post on my posts or on the topics of the Sentinel website. There actually was a series of comments today on the city council meeting. Actually, it wasn't the city council meeting. That was yesterday that they had the comments about the meeting on Tuesday. But there are comments on the meeting last night of the task force, the citizen task force, the one about public hysteria against the homeless, which they call public safety. And they met in the police community room. It's interesting. If you look at their agenda online, or if you look at their notice online of what's going on with the public, with this committee, it says it seems to indicate they're meeting in the Tony Hill room of the auditorium, of the Civic Auditorium, which is where I told people to go. When I got there last night, there was nobody there, and I wandered over to the library and got the reference desk to look it up again. And if you go further and deeper into the actual agenda, you'll see they've moved the meeting to the police community room, police department community room, which it doesn't mean that they're necessarily tools of the police or vice versa, though that's quite probable for other reasons, because there are numerous things that happen in the community room of the police department. Though Huff has never held a meeting there, I can tell you, and probably never will, but who knows? Maybe we should do that just as a matter of...
It's a good spot, and there's usually parking, whether there's a meeting or not.
You know, I actually found a parking spot there last night, but I didn't think I would. But there wasn't a lot of people... The audience was two-thirds full, and there were only 44 seats. I counted them. The Citizen Task Force operates, they have 15 people sitting around a U-shaped table. And this particular presentation, they were hearing from the police department for 90 minutes and then talking for 90 minutes. And if you want to find out more about this committee, you can go to the Sentinel for their utterly inadequate, you know, 7 paragraphs, "We love you" reports about the Public Safety Committee investigating. But even, it's interesting, even that, the best place to go is, of course, if you have time to burn, is to read their minutes, their draft minutes, which actually came out before the meeting, and you can also read their, you can listen to their meeting. It was videoed this time. Their first meeting was not videoed. Their second one was, and it was videoed by two different video groups. One was Community TV, and the other was some other guy who I have no idea who he was. So you can, if anybody wants to follow this with any seriousness, they can. My, of course, reaction is, as I've suggested online, that this is such a hoax, has nothing to do with any real public safety, that is really what we should be... People should show up with signs that say, "Go home, this is a hoax, investigate rape, not survival camping, get a clue, you bigots." I don't, whatever you want to say. I mean, I kind of put it very sarcastically and perhaps undiplomatically. I mean, I'm not very diplomatic about this stuff. No, I'm not.
No one would hear you if you were.
And I can't hear you now because you're about 4 feet away from the mic. But
I'm
eventually, you're not. You're being lazy or tired. I don't know which. So there's a lot of, if you want to find out what's going on with them and you try to look at their video, it may be posted online. If you go to the Santa Cruz City Council website and you go to the Public Safety Committee, which is not them, that's the Terrazas kind of a butt boy group that is kind of letting themselves be fucked repeatedly.
Weird.
In my view, using street language of a rather coarse sort, I would say they are allowing themselves to be manipulated and used by a group of people in a way that directly harms homeless people and also misleads the broader community. And that upsets me. Hence my use of colorful and, one might even say, obscene language.
While I'm here, do you want me to read that prepared statement, which
I didn't deliver
to Tuesday?
Yes, I do. And I brought it with me, in fact, myself, because you gave me a copy. But you read. You got your copy with you? I've got mine, too.
No, I don't. You'd have to give it to me.
All right, let's see if I can find it here in my bag of tricks.
What happened was at Tuesday night's city council meeting, knowing that the council was going to adopt an ordinance banning people asking for alms on city medians and roundabouts, I prepared a statement which I considered giving and eventually didn't, since it was obvious to me that the ordinance was running on greased skids and the fix was in, so no one's mind was going to be changed. But
hoping I can find it here because it's you can check out Take Back Santa Cruz's latest some of its earlier stuff here.
Afterward, I handed my notes to Robert and he said, "Well, this is true. You should have said it anyway."
I think so. I think even if we can't find it, you can kind of give us the substance of it. It was rather sarcastic, the kind of thing that Steve Plaich might find inappropriate on his website, for because it would strident.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to say that Steve Plaich's website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, isn't a bad website. I recommend people go to it, check it out. There's some interesting dialogue. Some of it is noxious, in my view, but, you know, I think, you know, he's trying to include voices from the right and from the left. And I'm trying to find your statement, which it seems to now have disappeared.
Well, I learned when he censored two of my comments that I need to keep a copy of things I put on those Facebook pages because I have no idea what I said that was bad or naughty or embarrassing or insulting.
Right. Well, I
don't remember meaning to do that.
I was offended when I heard that Steve had begun censoring stuff. But on the other hand, I know that everybody has their own website, their own view as to what should... You know, what should, if you're running your own website, I mean, the Huff website does not censor, but it will hide comments and send people, say, if you really want to see all the troll talk, click here.
Mm.
But you don't have to, if you don't want to, you don't have to. And
that's cool.
And so this was in response to our concern that people were, you know, that the Indy Bay authorities were censoring too much. This is my Public Records Act request to Hillary Bryan. I'm passing it around. I'll be posting that shortly. Also, just letting people know, I'm going back to court on the two mayors lawsuit coming up, which is more popularly known as the mock Nazi lawsuit. We're trying to get a new trial because, as you will learn from the article once I post it and once I post the briefs that the attorneys have filed, there was no basis, zero evidence, that indicated that it was a disruption of the city council when I raised my arm to object to the mayor's censorship and threats against another member of the public. And that being the case, the jury's verdict should be thrown out. It was just simply was unjustified. And I mean, I'm a big fan of juries more usually than I am of judges. But my attorneys seem to feel that the judge is going to give them a fair shake. I think they are very optimistic in that regard. And, you know, your letter, Jim, is probably sitting in the car somewhere. And that's too bad because it was I remember looking it over and I was impressed with it.
Well, the substance of it was that... I felt that I needed to preface it by saying that I was going to indulge in a bit of irony, which in this day and age is too often misunderstood and misused. Irony being a rhetorical device in which one says the opposite of what one means or exaggerates absurdly in order to tell the truth.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, the truth is that... in this town, which is our town, we do not like the looks of filthy beggars occupying our public spaces. They're probably criminals, and we want them to go away. So what we need is a city ordinance that will make it possible for any decent citizen... who's hardworking and law-abiding and God-fearing, like me or one of our esteemed city council members, should we ever have the misfortune of encountering a filthy beggar, we will be entirely within our rights to say to him or her, "You filthy beggar, I do not like the sight of you."
Right.
And you're probably a criminal. This is my town, and I want you to get out of it. So I'm going to call the police, and I'm going to have them arrest you and take you to jail, in which case you will definitely be a criminal. And then, if you should happen to get out of jail the next day and have the temerity to come back and appear in public again, then I will do the same thing. And if you do it again, I'll do it again, and I'll keep doing it until you get the message that this is our town, and we do not like the looks of filthy beggars. We want you to go away and take your discarded needles and your human feces with you. So there.
You know, I think that that's certainly a step in the right direction, Jim, but don't you think it would be, you know, you could add some force to it by saying, we're going to kick your ass out of town if you don't fucking leave, which is what several groups of people have been told in the last month, according to direct testimony. Some have actually been assaulted. Of course, the police department does this under color of law on occasion, and they don't use that kind of language, but when one man, whose initial I will give only as W, and I talked about him on the air, I believe, last Sunday. I do a Sunday show in the morning. Tune in. He stated that after getting ticketed twice downtown for sitting and in the same hour and being followed by officers Ehlers and Warren, he crossed Union Grove parking lot and was and told them, in essence, you fucking faggot cops, you bastards, or some such thing. He went into this series of, you know, abusive language. And they came over and beat him up. And he showed me stitches in his lower lip, which he actually has described on tape. And he said he was jailed, and he now faces a criminal complaint of resisting arrest. It isn't clear what he was being arrested for. They claim, I think one of the claims was it was trespass in the Union Grove parking lot. You know, walking through the Union Grove parking lot is not trespass. I'm sorry. It's sort of like what they did with me when they arrested me for trespass at the Metro Transit Center when I told a guard, I told two guys, you don't have to answer questions to these guys, and you don't, you know, these security guards, they have no right to harass you. And the security guard came over and started harassing me. And I was cited. I wasn't really. I mean, I was non-custodially arrested, but I wasn't taken into custody or handcuffed, but forced to appear in court. And the court process colluded with my conviction, even though it was obvious to any ordinary person that I was, and even to an attorney who took the case pro bono, that there was no crime being committed. The crime was against me, not against the public or against the security guard. But the security guard demanded was to know my name, and I said, I want to know your name. And he refused to give his name. And then he insisted I leave because I said, no, this is a public area. And this is a metro area. I was eventually convicted of blocking the Metro Transit sign, which is 7 feet long.
In fact, you had to appear in court and account for yourself?
Then. Oh, repeatedly. Yeah. And it was taken into an appeal to... I think it was.
But they did finally train the security guard much later.
I mean, I had nothing against the security guard, really. I don't really even have a lot against the police officers who do this stuff. I mean, I will call them out vigorously on the streets when they do, and attack them on the air by name, as you've seen when they do, and in front of city council, even if they turn off my mic, which they have tried to do in the past. But When you talk to them as people, they're just people. The trouble is when you put on a uniform with a badge, a gun, a taser, a security belt, a bulletproof shield, whatever the hell else you've got, acting like, you know, it's the Third World War when it's not, and treating people as though they were combatants in a Third World War, then you become, in essence, a kind of robotic figure who has to be dealt with as a threat, really, to the public safety. I think the police and the people who are engaging in these kinds of activities against homeless people they're a threat to the Constitution, they're a threat to the public safety, and they really threaten the fabric of a society that would like to believe in... I mean, when I was a kid, I believed in the police department. I'm going to be a cop when I grow up. That's what I wanted to do when I was six. I don't remember that, but that's what I was told that I said as a kid.
Well, a lot of kids go through that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that's part of the deification. And part of it is the power. You know, you've got a gun.
And the uniform,
but you're on the right side, so you can do what you know. You can
do
stuff.
You get to point and shoot. That's a boy thing.
Yeah. 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 Well, aren't you sad you don't have a penis? You know, we could, maybe an operation could be helpful here.
I remember Jack Webb. That was my early police department. That was pretty cool. But, you know, out here we have real people of all sorts. Just like in any other job.
So there are a couple of other things which I may be able to play in the time remaining. There's not a lot of time. Let's see if we can. Here's a unique proposal to control the homeless. That was, if I can get this up in time, that was proposed in Sacramento. It's actually in a community near Sacramento. And I'm going to, rather than read it, I'm going to play it. Let's see if we can do this. We're almost ready. Police chief uses unique method to control homeless population. This is from Nevada City. And here's the...
In the past, you would never find...
Unfortunately, we're going to have to listen first to an advertisement, which I'm going to turn down.
Problem in his city, and it's putting homeless on the hot seat. A new law would give Nevada City the power to hand out permits to a small group of homeless, giving them permission to sleep in public.
New tonight, Maria Medina's wife, some would get them, others
could get arrested.
And while the new ordinance will give homeless a place to stay, it'll tell others, mostly troublemakers and criminals, to stay away.
For Bob Barton, who chooses to be homeless in Nevada City, a new ordinance that would essentially identify law-abiding homeless and reward them is music to his ears.
I come down here every fall.
And the goal is to start managing the homeless population within our city.
Police Chief James Wickham asked city council members to pass a no-camping ordinance.
It just basically means you can't set up a tent, you can't have living your vehicle, you can't live in the woods in Nevada City.
Unless you have a permit. The chief says his program is one of a kind, making only a select few of the city's homeless population an exception to the law, like William Peach.
And there's some of us, like myself, who try to blend with the community.
But others who come to Nevada City to commit crimes or with a criminal history won't be so lucky.
And those are the ones we really don't want in our city, and that we're trying to keep from camping in our city.
We've seen a huge upsurge in homeless people.
Teresa Mann, who owns a business in downtown, says it's about time. So do the homeless.
How are you doing, Mr. Maxwell?
Who stay out of trouble and want trouble to stay away.
And if they're homeless and heartless, hey, we got a place for them. It's called County Jail.
And for now, the police chief says he'll be giving out 6 to 10 permits, and he'll check back in about 6 months. If the program is working, he says that's when he'll give out more permits.
The police chief says he has identified at least 60 homeless in his community and 500 homeless countywide.
So what do you think about that, Jim? I just love
the way the term homeless is used as a collective noun. You know, it's almost as if we're saying animal units.
Yeah.
There were 60 homeless, as if there were maybe 60 head of steer out there on the
out on the range.
Right. But I think that's a great story. You know, Nevada City has found a way to do something that we haven't been able to do in Santa Cruz. God knows. The co-president of Take Back Santa Cruz, Mr. Becker, has been going all around town saying that the criminals are hiding among the homeless. He hasn't yet been able to tell me how to separate the criminals from the non-criminal homeless yet.
You've got to contact Nevada City.
But he knows they're there. But this is the way to do it. You give them permits, you see? You can easily identify the good guys from the bad guys, permit the good guys, bust the bad guys, run them out of town, lynch them, do whatever you have to do to get rid of them. What an idea. It's perfect.
It's an idea. His time has come, clearly. So,
and gone.
And, well, Nevada City, you know, the city of the future. I'll be trying to put that out. Linda, do you have any thoughts on that one?
Just one. That kind of prejudice in this country is unconstitutional. We can't just decide by looking at someone who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. Of course, people don't think of homeless people as people, but to me they are.
Some positive stuff as well I wanted to point out. Getting a letter from Palo Alto where they're trying to overturn Palo Alto's ordinance which allows people to sleep in their vehicles. They tried to stop them, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and the courts overturned it. And there's now another attempt to overturn it. And there's a fighting going on to keep the ordinance in place. Here's some discussion of the, to keep to stop a new anti-homeless ordinance from coming into power. Here's one. One person writes, what a shameful ordinance. Does anyone have the names and contact information of these council members? A permanent encampment outside the homes of these insensitive politicians might require more activist commitment that can be practically generated and sustained, but I like the general approach. Perhaps a more doable campaign could focus on disrupting their sleep. Sounds like David Silva's proposals of 2000. Since they want to criminalize other people for sleeping by students driving by their homes and honking their horns at random times in the middle of the night. I would suggest such a campaign be preceded by notes delivered to the homes of their neighbors, apologizing for any disturbances since the neighbors' sleep would likely also be unavoidably disrupted, and suggesting they ask their neighboring council members to withdraw their support for using the law to criminalize sleep, dropped off at the homes of those neighbors, along with gift certificates, maybe $20 each, to a popular local business or something of similar value. This would require raising some money from supporters of the campaign, towards which I would gladly donate, but could go a long way towards minimizing negative backlash. I'm not so sure about that. Ideally, the noise would be even more specifically targeted against the offending council members, for instance, by using noisemakers directly under their windows, or maybe serenading them with homeless tunes at night. But there is
Irene, good night.
Roman, Irene, Roman, Roman. Keep those homeless Roman. Go hide. Don't try to house and feed them. Just jail, rob, and beat them. Drive them back into the night.
Yay!
Yeah! Speaking of cattle herding. So this is from Palo Alto. There's a proposed sleep in your car protest coming up over there. And I'm hoping to get more information on it. This campout idea, one person writes, worked in front of the Stanford president's office to fight investment in racist South Africa, but that was in the mid-80s, I imagine. It can work in Palo Alto by picking homes.
Oh,
do I hear a bell? Am I hearing bells? What is that?
Somebody's listening.
Must be a phone call coming in.
It's one of the fans.
Yo, you're on free radio.
Hey, how's it going? This call is just...
TJ, we have 5 minutes.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. TJ in the studio with me is Laura Tucker, Linda LeMaster, and Jim Weller. Say hello, Jim.
Hey there, TJ.
Say hello, Linda and Laura.
Hi.
Hey, TJ.
Say hello, TJ.
Hi there. How you guys doing?
Stay out of the wind.
Oh, we're groovy.
So,
yeah, sorry I missed your call. We were actually sitting here looking out. I was taking a look at the weather here. We've had some crazy weather all day, that's for sure.
So I've been pointing out that you've been, I described you as being, if not driven out of town, at least discouraged from your environmental cleanup work by a takeover of the clean team by Take Back Santa Cruz. Is that accurate?
Oh, no, not exactly. No, I mean, it's just kind of, it's just kind of the icing on the cake. I was just a little fed up with Santa Cruz, needed to take a break.
You know,
I mean, there was definitely, there was some aspects of that that just kind of exasperated it, but yeah, you know, I was contemplating getting out of town anyway.
Was it accurate to say that you, that Take Back Santa Cruz took over the clean team?
I'm not sure if they did it on purpose, but it was definitely taken over by members of Take Back Santa Cruz, absolutely, yeah.
And you have, and I'm just, since we don't have any time, I can't really get into new areas, and I'd like to do that maybe on Sunday if you're around in the morning.
Sure.
We can go further. But you have points of difference and concern about some of the activities Take Back Santa Cruz. I don't know if you're aware of it. They passed 2 new anti-homeless ordinances on Tuesday. Illegal to stand on the median with a sign that says, "We'll work for food," for instance. Illegal for anybody to stand on the median with a sign that says anything, even, you know, I don't know, end the war in Afghanistan. That's now become illegal. Illegal for people to immediately, if you get a ticket for anything in a park, you can now be told to leave for 24 hours, even before they take the ticket to court. And if you don't, you can go to jail for up to a year. That's the new law that got a first reading at City Council. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, you know, it sounds like same old as far as Santa Cruz is concerned. You know, it seems like there's an epic battle going on, almost like a class war, you know, us versus them type thing. And unfortunately, you know, the environment of Santa Cruz isn't benefiting by this, and neither are the people of Santa Cruz. And I think until we're able to find that space where people can come together and work together and put aside their differences, we're going to be kind of stuck in a state of purgatory.
You were close to the tornado over there, were you?
I was today, yeah. While I was at work, it was, you know, it was some miles away, but I was glued to the television while I'm trying to work and keep an eye and see what's going on with the weather, you know?
Oh, so much for my... You weren't in the middle of it at any point.
No, but I recently was down in Moore where the big tornado hit. I was there 45 minutes before the tornado hit, and a couple hours right after it hit, I was back down there trying to do a volunteer and help out however I could, you know? And it's pretty eye-opening. I mean, speaking of homelessness, I mean, there was thousands of people made homeless right there instantaneously. And, you know, there's a lot more... For some reason, there seems to be a lot more compassion out here by people. I don't know if it's maybe because we're closer to the Bible Belt or something, but, you know, it seems like every... You know, the funny thing is, on the medians out here in Oklahoma, people stand out and they give out money the same way people would ask for money. It's interesting.
Yeah, well, I imagine in the middle of a disaster, things change as well. You know, that can produce a different attitude, so...
Yeah. You know. I think it's also, you know, people out here are kind of used to having nothing once, you know, somewhere along... you know, everybody out here in one shape or form has been affected by a tornado, you know, in the past. And I think they're a little more forgiving of people who have nothing because they know what it's like to be in the same situation, you know?
I hear you. I'm going to have to leave it there, TJ, because you called in just as...
Robert.
Another show is beginning. We have this very irascible and somewhat erratic talk show host.
Time's up.
Uncle Dennis, who you can hear him in the background.
Oh, excellent. Well, hey, I'm sorry I missed your call, and glad I was able to get in touch for a little bit here.
Yeah, no, let's call again on Sunday, or I will try to call you on Sunday morning, and we'll talk.
Sounds good.
And talk.
Blah,
sounds
blah,
good, man.
Blah.
All right, well, you guys have a good one, and be safe out there, and... You know, that's everything to you guys.
Hey, good to hear from you, TJ. We'll talk more next time.
Okay, bye.
And that's it for this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside. Wait, there's another quick phone call. Hey there, you're on Free Radio, and we're in overtime here.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Uncle Robert. Happy birthday.